Just before the Second World War, another Act of Parliament was passed to enable the Trust to acquire a lot of very large country houses. Now, many people say this is one of the great glories of Britain, England in particular, the fine, big houses. Now, some of you might think they're palaces or something, say, for a monarch or a nobleman, but not necessarily. Some aren't, in fact, so huge, but they're very attractive houses with fine furniture and paintings and contents and lovely gardens, usually, which were often the centre of a small region. The people living around would work in the house in various capacities or on the farm attached to the house. So these houses were the centre of, say, a whole complex of people. Now, after the First World War and up to the Second World War, these houses experienced a lot of problems because of the wars. Women in particular could find work in factories or in the fighting. They didn't want to work in these houses anymore. They didn't want to work as servants. And the houses were rather expensive to look after. And when the owner died, he typically had to pay a lot of money in tax because the house was very valuable as a property and because of its contents. But the owner didn't actually have any money. Very often the owners had no cash, they just had this wonderful asset, and it was a problem. But through discussions with the government, it was agreed that these houses, their contents, the gardens were a wonderful resource, so the government would pass them on to the National Trust or even enable the owners to live in them and not pay taxes. Not pay taxes when one owner died and his or her son or daughter took over. So the Trust started acquiring a lot of houses. And you saw on one of my earlier lists, the Trust has 200 houses, not all enormous ones. In 1947, a garden was given to the Trust by actually the American owner. It's a very beautiful garden in the west of England, a very, very popular place to visit. In 1965, we had Enterprise Neptune. Who knows who Neptune is? He's a god, the god of the sea. And this was an enterprise or project to try and enable the National Trust to own more coastline. Now, in many countries, ordinary people can't walk along by the seashore because it's owned by a private person. We feel in this country, well, we all own the sea. We all ought to be able to walk beside it. So the National Trust wanted to buy more and more of it so everybody could walk there. Now, in the 1980s, the National Trust had 1 million members. So up from 100 in 1895 to 1 million 85 years later. Then in the centenary year, we had 2.25, soon after 3 million, 2006, 3.4 million members, and I looked at the website yesterday and it still says 3.4 million members. That's a big jump. It's a big jump from the foundation, but it's a big jump in recent years. I think perhaps there are two reasons. One is that, again, people, and this time more people, are worried about the loss of the land, the loss of countryside. Not because of factories, but because of more building of houses, the spread of towns, the spread of suburbs. So we feel Britain, certainly England, certainly the south of England, where we all are, is going to be one big suburb with lots of roads and big shopping complexes. So we want that to stop. And also, there's more of a leisure society. People don't work such long hours. People have a bit more money, or a lot of people do. They like to spend their free time in the countryside and or visiting the country houses. So they think, well, let's join. The National Trust is a good thing because it looks after our land, a lot of our land, and it looks after these lovely old houses. So we'll become members, so it'll be cheaper. I am muddling up my transparencies in the programme. So how is the National Trust funded?